radical left has taken over the Democratic Party.
Hello and welcome to Think Progressively, covering politics and all the other chaos life has to offer. This is episode 120, recorded on Friday, April 12th from Milwaukee. I'm Joe.
And I'm Jason.
And on today's episode, is NPR too woke? No, it's not. But we're going to discuss the latest article by one of their senior editors saying they are. But first, the headlines.
I got along with him well, although he did announce the other day that he'd much rather see Biden as president. And I agree with him. I agree.
Up first, Joe Biden is a damn socialist, and we should all hate him for it.
No, those are the parts of Joe Biden that we like.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good point. Well, the reason why we also should hate, love Joe Biden is because while in Wisconsin, I didn't see him, by the way. I was real sad about that. Biden unveiled a new student debt relief plan that is just wonderful. It's the best thing. It's basically communism. Free school for everybody.
Takes money directly from the pockets of working Americans.
At gunpoint. Literally at gunpoint. He like strings them up. He's like, I'm going to bring you upside down at gunpoint until all your money falls
and
out.
And only gives it to graduates of Ivy League schools.
Yep, absolutely.
So this new five-part plan uses, rather than the last time that Joe Biden tried to do this via executive order, this uses the Higher Education Act that gives the Secretary of Education the authority to waive student debt in some cases. The same Secretary of Education that the GOP now wants to eliminate.
Yep.
This would cancel student loan debt for an estimated 30 million Americans, which would be 75% of all federal student loan borrowers, because again, this does not affect private loans. It can only affect loans taken from federal loan institutions, hence why the federal government has any power over this.
Correct.
The first part of this plan would cancel $20,000 in accrued interest. So just the interest for borrowers who owe more than they originally borrowed. It would also be more for those with an income lower than $120,000 and who are enrolled in a debt repayment plan. And for those people, it can wipe out up to all of the interest. So this is literally just saying the federal government cannot make money off of your loan.
Yes.
So not even just you pay back the amount that you borrowed, but just you don't have to pay more than the amount that
you borrowed. Right, because the whole idea of getting saddled in student loans is not the principal, obviously. It's the interest that always what kills people in the end, right? And that's the basis of any debt-based situation. It's always the interest that ends up doing more damage over time than the actual principle. And that's a good thing. Like, this is a good thing. I can't even imagine. I mean, I can because we live in a stupid country, but like, I can't even imagine like a good, well thought out argument saying we shouldn't saddle our citizens with tons of interest to the point where they struggle to even pay back their student loans. They're just giving more and more money back to the government that they supposedly also hate.
And there are so many private businesses as well that spring up to manage these loans and manage debt consolidation and repayment and processing.
It's so expensive.
And all these companies are making millions and millions and millions of dollars off of education that they didn't provide. It's literally just managing these loans.
Correct.
So yes, let's get rid of all of that.
So, all right, that's one win.
Second, cancel all remaining debt for borrowers who have been repaying undergraduate loans for 20 years or more, or 25 years for those with graduate school debt.
Also seems incredibly reasonable to me.
Right.
I mean, if you're paying a quarter of your life, granted, like, if you even live up to 100, just
well, that would be a fifth. Quarter would be...
Oh, sorry, I'm looking at 25 years.
Sure, sure.
You're right, I'm sorry. But anyway, 20 to 25% of your life,
right.
If you live up to 100 years old, we can math this out. Man, it's not even worth it anymore.
Right.
So, I can't understand the freak out, Jason.
Part three, automatically cancel debt for those who qualify for other programs but have not applied. So literally, this is debt that should have already been forgiven, except for the paperwork and everything involved. They already know who qualifies.
Just didn't go through, though.
Yeah, they just didn't. It's not automatic. So this would just make it automatic.
Sounds easy enough.
It should have always been this way.
Yeah.
Again, this is the whole reason why Republicans constantly push for more. They want regulation out of the government, except when it comes to social programs. Anything where you are getting some kind of refund or payment from the government, so much regulation that you either don't realize that you qualify for it, can't fill out the paperwork, make a mistake, and get rejected. This would just eliminate all of that, and it eliminates a lot of administration. So it would save money because you don't have to have someone that processes these applications and checks whether or not people qualify. They can already tell automatically just through the system who qualifies. Again, absolutely ridiculous that it's not like that now. The fourth part would cancel debt for borrowers who attended colleges or programs that were deceptive or predatory in nature.
Seems completely reasonable to me.
And I have here Trump University.
That's a good example.
I think they already did have to pay back.
Right.
Tuition. They lost a lawsuit.
But think of how many stories we hear over and over again about these predatory for-profit universities either closing down or giving out degrees that are literally useless.
Right. And we're not saying they're liberal arts degrees.
No,
we're saying it's like DeVry University, right. Like unaccredited schools.
Right. So yes, I fully believe that those people who got literally scammed should probably have their loans forgiven. And then we should also really tighten down hard on these freaking universities that Republicans love so much.
For-profit private universities.
You know, the super freedom-loving Betsy DeVos of the last administration.
And finally, cancel debt for those with medical or other financial hardships. And really, you're not getting that money anyway. And once again, it would lessen costs trying to collect from people that can't pay it back. If you are saddled with a bunch of medical debt on top of your student loans and you can't work, nobody's getting their money.
Right.
So stop trying. It'll save you time and money and hassle even doing it. And it saves the people that you're calling every week from stress. You know, how many people consider suicide as a way out when they're in these situations?
Like, right.
Let's take as much burden off of them as we possibly can.
Yeah, I completely agree. And of course, conservatives acted with the complete nuance that you've come to expect nowadays, where all they've done is give out these tired same arguments over and over and over again. You know, I put in the notes a Washington Post opinion cartoon that has Biden giving a bill to somebody that's listed as taxpayer who says, but I didn't have any student loans. And that's not a problem because, of course, the taxpayers who did their fair share already are getting hit hard with the student debt relief.
Right.
For these stupid hippies and woke libs who are getting these ridiculous degrees and now are just making the other hardworking people pay for it.
Their women's studies degree. Ugh.
Well, it's just ridiculous, man. And to put an actual example of this, I found a few fun comments from disgraced former president of American Atheists, David Silverman, who is now a crazy, crazy, crazy right-wing libertarian. And here were his super high IQ takes on the student debt relief. Quote, they knew that when they signed the papers and took the money. And then they got useless degrees with the money. It's all squarely on them. Pay your debts, make good decisions, stop whining. He went on to say, everyone knew what was happening. Everyone knew about interest rates. Everyone went in fully aware, or at least the information was available. None of it is new. And so today, none of that has changed. So maybe today's students should just continue and not pay? Or is this just a special election bribe? You know, man.
Well, let's take some financial advice from the guy that was fired from American Atheists for embezzling money to promote his book.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, he doubled down on the useless degrees, saying, yes, useless degrees, not STEM. Feminist studies, theater, etc. I remember having the discussion of having degrees that pay with my dad back in the 80s. So I have so many freaking opinions about this. First off, the most common degrees in America right now are business degrees, which have become one of the most useless degrees in the entire country. I can say that as someone who has a business degree. I'm so done with this trope, man. The amount of people who will immediately go to, oh, it's just women's studies. And
why is feminist, it always women's studies?
Because they have nothing else. Because they actually don't know how the world works and they just hate women.
They're too self-aware to say like African-American studies. So they always go like, well, I can still attack feminism. That's fine.
Also, the idea of like, oh, everyone knew what was happening when they were going to college. Dude, screw off. Are you serious? When I was in high school, I had no idea what was going on. I mean, he's so freaking angry.
Well, I am I'm someone who never did go to college. I don't have any student loans. And I still think all of these plans to forgive student loans should go through. I believe college should be free.
Why? Because you want to just give a bunch of whiny little partiers a chance to take your money away?
Let's give everyone as much opportunity as we can to really take advantage of what everyone says is the American dream, right? You go to college, get a degree, go be productive and pay taxes. Why is it fine if you're born into a wealthy family that can afford to pay your college and you don't have to pay anything? Why is that fine? But having your loans that you can't even chip away at the principal because your loan is five times more than what it costs for you to go to school, just having the interest forgiven on that loan, how is that somehow too far? It's ridiculous.
Well, right. And it makes me even angrier where it's the same people, David Silverman's one of them, who will then rant all day long about, well, this isn't actually going to help the poor working class of our country.
It demonstrably, it does.
First off, yes, it does. And second off, okay, so where were you when we were talking about them? All these other conversations.
Well, and again,
you didn't care during those other conversations about them. You called them worthless in those other conversations.
And once again, if this helps to pay for college for someone who's rich, that's fine. They pay taxes too. They should get to benefit from government programs as well.
It's literally considered an investment in your own population. That's the idea of having this type of stuff.
The difference is those loans aren't going to crush the life of someone who's rich.
Correct.
But they will to the average American.
Correct. So stupid. But good job, Joe Biden. I mean, he already knows that this is going to get challenged. He's going to get sued over this.
Yep.
And it's mostly going to get overturned again because this is the world we live in.
But this is what he needs to do.
Correct.
Is to just keep fighting these. Yes, it's difficult, but that's why you're the president. That's why you said you wanted the job over everyone else.
Yep.
It wasn't because it was going to be easy to get all these things passed. You were supposed to be the great unifier, so let's do it.
Yep, I agree. Next up, the Arizona Supreme Court has now officially allowed a near total abortion ban to take place due to, what was it, an 1860s, 1864 law. Fantastic, Jason.
Yes, the Arizona State Supreme Court, whose members were all appointed by Republicans, in a 4-2 ruling, upheld the 1864 law that was passed 50 years before Arizona became a state, when it was still a territory.
I can't even fathom that idea.
That fully criminalizes all abortions. And they did change this law in 2021 to remove the jail term from the mother. So this was actually when this bill, you know, in 1864, it was both the doctor and the mother would be going to jail. Now it is only the doctor.
Oh, we got woke now? What happened?
Well, I think they realized that jailing women for seeking health care is not really all that popular, even amongst Republicans. The only exception is in the life of the mother's in danger. And as we saw in Texas, that's pretty much worthless.
Right.
Because you have to go before multiple courts to try to determine.
Who are all conservative, who are literally do anything to override. Right.
And at that point, you're going to be dead.
Right.
And has no exceptions for rape or incest. Justice Bill Montgomery, which is why if you look, is a 4-2 ruling. It's an even number. That's weird. There's seven members of the state Supreme Court because Justice Bill Montgomery recused himself from the case after the publication of news reports that he had written a Facebook post saying that Planned Parenthood had participated in the greatest generational genocide known to man.
Cool.
So he didn't recuse himself because he was biased and had already made up his mind.
Because he was found out.
It's because it was reported that he was
balls
already
and strikes. These judges are just calling balls and strikes. They are the true unbiased arbiters of our country.
And
God,
to make it even worse, on Wednesday, the GOP-led Arizona state legislature quickly adjourned for the week when an attempt was made by Democrats to open discussion on repealing the territorial law, something that we are very familiar with.
I was just going to say that.
In Wisconsin, where our GOP majority constantly does the exact same thing because they are cowards and they refuse to actually govern. So it's not just a Wisconsin thing, it's actually all across the country. And there is some fallout. Former gubernatorial candidate claims that she won, the election was rigged, and current Senate candidate Carrie Lake, who praised the Civil War era abortion ban on multiple occasions while running for governor in 2022, when Republicans still believed that the impending repeal of Roe v. Wade would be popular among their voters. And we actually have a clip of her supporting this bill on multiple occasions.
I don't believe in abortion. I think the older law is going to go into effect. That's what I believe will happen. I don't think abortion pills should be legal.
We have a great law on the books right now. If that happens, we will be a state where we will not be taking the lives of our unborn anymore.
I'm incredibly thrilled that we are going to have a great law that's already on the books. So it will prohibit abortion in Arizona. And I think we're going to be paving the way and setting course for other states to follow.
So there you go. Specifically talking about Roe v. Wade being overturned and this 1864 law taking effect.
And now that's actually taking effect.
And praising it multiple times 2 years ago.
Yep.
But now, because it's very clear that banning abortion is not popular, even among conservatives, Carrie Lake released a statement calling the law out of step with Arizonans and saying that she opposed the ruling.
Man, like every time you think, wow, they can't get any more blatant in how they just lie. But it's true, though, because Donald Trump is doing the exact same thing right now, where he was pushing over and over and over again that he's the guy who overturned Roe v. Wade and that he's the most pro-choice candidate you could ever imagine. And now that he's being pushed in Florida, because now they're going to do a referendum in Florida.
Where he lives,
he's wobbling all over the place now, too, because he also realizes how bad of a spot Republicans are in because of this issue.
And we do have a clip from his speech as well.
Many people have asked me what my position is on abortion and abortion rights, especially since I was proudly the person responsible for the ending of something that all legal scholars, both sides, wanted and, in fact, demanded be ended. Roe v. Wade. They wanted it ended. It must be remembered that the Democrats are the radical ones on this position because they support abortion up to and even beyond the ninth month. The concept of having an abortion in the later months and even execution after birth, and that's exactly what it is. The baby is born, the baby is executed after birth, is unacceptable, and almost everyone agrees with that. My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state. Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be.
That's how we want our rights to work. It's different depending on which state you live in. You know, if it's more conservative, maybe you're a slave.
I'm glad we live in the United States of America, where, I don't know, we're not united at all in our state's governance at all.
Right. It's not, we're not talking about like sales tax.
No.
Literally talking about your medical rights.
Well, and again, the irony of immediately having the Arizona case come out right after he put out that video.
Right, it was the next day.
Yeah, it's like, all right, well, you just said it. Here you go.
And, I mean, just how many lies were packed into that. I'm always amazed at how much he can lie.
Legal scholars on both sides
demanded the overturning of Roe v. Wade. No, that's a lie.
You're right.
Democrats want to execute. They want, you're in the store with your three-year-old child. Democrats just want to be able to come up and kill him. That's everybody agrees that's bad. It's all just lies. And once again, I feel like we've said this 100 times, but we just played that clip. So I have to counter and say that's not what late term abortions are, right? 95-96% of abortions occur within the first two trimesters. Third trimester late term abortions are exclusively used when either the life of the mother or the life of the child is greatly at risk. The kid's going to die anyway. Do you want to give birth to a stillborn unborn child, or do you want a doctor to be able to take care of that as soon as they're aware that it's happening? Because it can also impact the life of the mother. That's what a late-term abortion is. And the fact that Republicans keep lying about this, and that Donald Trump himself is going to say that he's some bastion of choice and nuance on this matter, while still repeating those anti-abortion lies, shows you where he's really at, where he's getting his information from, who is advising him,
yep,
and who he's listening to. If you think that he wouldn't sign a federal abortion ban if he became president again and one was put on his desk, you are lying to yourself. You are Lisa Murkowski. You are Suzanne Collins.
But Jason, he said he wouldn't sign one.
And the fact that he even admitted that he was the cause of Roe v. Wade being overturned shows you, again, who he's listening to. Because from his perspective, if this was all on the up and up, he would have just appointed three fair, qualified justices to the Supreme Court. And whatever their decisions were, that's on them. But he gives the game away. By saying, no, look, I got Roe v. Wade overturned. I had to get three justices who were handpicked specifically to overturn Roe v. Wade, who all lied in front of Congress when they said they hadn't already made up their minds on that case. And that, no, Roe v. Wade is precedent. You don't overturn precedent. But they were picked specifically to overturn Roe v. Wade and make abortion illegal in America. And he admits to that. But yet he wouldn't sign a bill making it federally banned. Nonsense.
So I'm going to end the story on a good potentially note. It's not really a good note, but the silver lining. The potential good note is that Arizona has been, at least polling wise, one of Trump's better swing states. And the big reason why is because all the talk has been about inflation and the border. But now with this new ruling and Donald Trump taking the credit for it, now abortion is going to be on everyone's minds in Arizona as they go to the polls. And on top of that, they're also already working on getting a referendum for the fall ballot as well. And if that gets on the fall ballot, they can message the hell out of that thing, which will be really good for Joe Biden in 2024 and will really be able to help come fall.
And help to get rid of this horrible 1864 law.
Right. So it could potentially galvanize a lot of voters in Arizona, overturn this thing via referendum, which is great because, in, like you said, they have a GOP-led legislature over there. And on top of that, we stop Donald Trump and Carrie Lake from taking office. I mean, this is the same story we hear over and over and over again with states like this, where Republicans, they're like the dogs who have finally caught up to the van, right? They've been chasing the car forever and they finally caught it, and now they don't know what to do. This is the world you wanted, you guys, and everyone hates it.
Well, and you see just the difference 2 years makes in Carrie Lake's position.
Well, right, because...
And how she's willing to lie because she knows her position's not popular.
Right, and again, the idea that Republicans are like the fact-based partier when you see them just going back and forth like crazy over this because they see how unpopular their opinions actually are just shows how full of shit they are. And speaking of full of shit candidates, our own U.S. Senate candidate, Eric Hovde, made quite a few headlines this last week where he said people in nursing homes probably shouldn't be voting. On the Guy Benson Show, which is a Fox News-based podcast, Eric Hovde was talking about the Racine nursing homes that supposedly were investigated and found all these potential weird voter fraud potentially out things. I don't know, man.
People in nursing homes voted.
Yeah, basically. When they shouldn't have or something.
Well, and this all boils down to the fact that there are programs where you will have election officials going to nursing homes in order to help elderly disabled voters vote.
Yes.
That's what it is. And, you know, if you think this is some kind of runaway epidemic where they're just grabbing votes from people that are in nursing homes. I checked. My dad, who no longer here, but was here in 2020, I made sure he did not vote. So it's not like some kind of conspiracy. You know, he was in a nursing home and there's no way he would have been able to vote by himself. He had very bad dementia.
Well, Eric Hovde doesn't believe that.
Yeah, I know. It's all a conspiracy.
On the show, he said, quote, "We had nursing homes where the sheriff of Racine investigated where you had 100% voting in nursing homes. Well, if you're in a nursing home, you only have 5-6 months of life expectancy."
That's not true.
Don't you know, man?
My dad was in that nursing home for over 3 years, and I got to know a lot of the people there. Most of them were there longer term. And I mean, maybe a little different because it was a memory care facility, but
dude,
still.
You got 5-6 months tops, all right? I'll see you later. I'll see you for your funeral. You're done, all right? Bye, Grandpa. Almost nobody in a nursing home is in a point to vote. And
that's, again, not true.
And you have children, adult children showing up that said, who voted for my 85 or 90-year-old father or mother?
Sure you did. It's a cool story.
I have relatives who are in their 90s that regularly vote. It's fine, man.
They prop up the Republican Party, man.
I cannot believe, like, what a weird thing to say. Again, Hovde is just going full 2020 conspiracy where he's proclaiming that Democrats were using any, like, weird and twisted way during the COVID pandemic to just steal votes everywhere for Joe Biden. And it's just bullshit, man. That's all it is.
A lot of bleeping in this episode.
Sorry. It makes me really angry. But it's true, though. Like, he's just pulling out lie after lie so he can just fire up Republican conspiracy theorists who just supposedly want to hate Democrats for whatever reason. That's all this is. And just taking shots at elderly people for not being able to vote.
In nursing homes.
Right. Like,
we should just ban them all from voting.
So good job, Eric.
Yeah, way to disenfranchise your base.
But his spokesperson did say in a statement, in no manner did Eric Hovde suggest that elderly people should not vote. He was referring to specific cases in Racine County where family members raised concerns about their loved ones voting.
But he did say that if you're in a nursing home, you're going to die soon. Why are you voting?
I was like, yeah, you made a lot of generalized statements. We're talking about real specific cases here.
You're saying it's so suspicious that those people voted because they shouldn't be voting.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, what's the conspiracy?
That was really a productive segment, wasn't it? It's hard to get any word in with this clown.
And for our combined Fox in the Head and Maine segment tonight, because this was an article so stupid and enraging, we just had to devote an entire segment to it.
We have a little bit different type of story. It's not, we don't have a clip or anything to play for you. Said it was an article written in Barry Weiss's The Free Press. So, you know, it's fair and balanced.
I'll say Barry Weiss was a conservative New York Times.
Yeah, New York Times
columnist, and then she became like editor. A Substack. Okay, then then she became like a Substack person who just talks about wokeness all day long.
Right, and the free speech. Oh, my free speech. So you know where this is coming from politically anyway. But current senior editor at NPR, Uri Berliner, wrote an article titled, I've been at NPR for 25 years. Here's how we lost America's trust. All about how NPR has shifted so left, they've gone woke, Joe. NPR used to be a bastion of journalistic integrity, but not anymore. And specifically, he lists 3 examples of where NPR's journalistic integrity was compromised. And they all stem from Donald Trump and their dislike of Donald Trump.
So when I was reading this, I got so angry. Man, again, I don't know what it is, but it's like maybe this weird reaction of you should know better type of thing. Does that make sense? It's like, dude, you're an NPR editor. Like, you should know better. And I told you, like, before we were recording, I just kept copying and pasting stuff from this article because it just kept getting dumber and dumber as it went on. I'm like, how are you a senior editor if this is like what your takeaways are? This is insane nonsense.
He says, what began as tough, straightforward coverage of a belligerent, truth-impaired president veered toward efforts to damage or topple Trump's presidency. And he lists, persistent rumors that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia over the election became the catnip that drove reporting. At NPR, we hitched our wagon to Trump's most visible antagonist, Representative Adam Schiff. But when the Mueller report found no credible evidence of collusion, NPR's coverage was notably sparse. Russiagate quietly faded from our programming.
And that is blatantly not freaking true. Should I not rant yet?
Well, yeah, just let me get the fact out of the way here. The fact of this opinion that he's giving about the results of the Mueller investigation actually factually, a total of 34 individuals and 3 companies were indicted by Mueller's investigators. 8 have pleaded guilty to or been convicted of felonies, including 5 Trump associates and campaign officials. No credible evidence of collusion. They just threw 8 people in jail.
This makes you so angry, dude, because this is what I have to do every freaking time someone brings up the damn Mueller report. Is I always have to ask, did you read the damn Mueller report? Because guess what? I did. And we want to talk about, oh, there's no actual evidence of collusion. Bullshit. Sorry. It goes into detail how Russia. Okay.
It's literally, yeah, they couldn't directly tie Donald Trump.
Because they looked at actual conspiracy legal issues compared to what collusion is, where collusion is literally just a random nonsense word in actual legal judicial settings, right? That's the idea. And conspiracy required hardcore, high precedent levels of intent to do that. And they did not find actual evidence of high level conspiracy. That does not mean that the report doesn't go into grave detail about how the Trump campaign acted as useful idiots on multiple occasions and colluded with the Russian government. They even talk about how Don Jr. literally met with a damn Russian agent to give dirt on Hillary Clinton for exchange for, I can't remember what it was even more. And the only reason why he wasn't indicted is because during the investigation, they couldn't prove that he meant to do that meeting with actual intent of breaking the law. He just didn't know what it was. And he played dumb, and that's how he got off.
Well, he is dumb.
Well, he is dumb. You're right. And that's just the first freaking half of the report. The other half talks about the numerous times of obstruction of justice that goes against Donald Trump during this investigation.
If you want more, we have a whole episode on the Mueller report.
I'm angry.
But let's move on with this.
But okay,
this is just the first one.
I know. But this is what makes me so angry about this. I'm not going to talk about the Mueller report anymore, I promise. But what makes me so angry is that is something that a senior freaking editor at NPR should know. That's what makes me angry, is that this is something that can clearly not just like be heard through the vibes or like of the newsrooms and crap like that, right? You can just read the damn report. Mm-hmm. And he didn't do that, but he's more than happy to just make crap up. Sorry. Now that's why I'm so angry about that.
Next, in October 2020, the New York Post published the explosive report about the laptop Hunter Biden abandoned at a Delaware computer shop containing emails about his sordid business dealings. With the election only weeks away, NPR turned a blind eye. Here's how NPR's managing editor for news at the time explained the thinking. We don't want to waste our time on stories that are not really stories, and we don't want to waste the listeners' and readers' time on stories that are just pure distractions. But it wasn't a pure distraction or a product of Russian disinformation, as dozens of former and current intelligence officials suggested. The laptop did belong to Hunter Biden. Its contents revealed his connection to the corrupt world of multi-million-dollar influence peddling and its possible implications for his father. Which
this is your turn.
Such the like conservative, like this guy goes out of his way throughout this article to talk about how he is so liberal and, you know, his mom was a lesbian activist. Yep. And he voted against Trump twice and all this. Why are you just repeating Republican talking points then? Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't even, you talk about a biased reporting. That's 100% what this entire article is completely biased.
Well, and you can
and
still
disconnected from reality.
Right. That's what, and I was going to say that too. Like, you can still have your own preferences and biases, and you can be more conservative, NPR, whatever. I don't care. But, and like you said, because a lot of people will say, oh, he's not going to talk about, or he's not going to just use talking points if they're just true. That's the point. You're using known, debunked talking points because it's your bias.
And I have some things here. Episode 10, very early on in the podcast, we talked about Hunter Biden's laptop. These are I just copied and pasted our notes from episode 10. The author of the article on the New York Post that he's talking about did not want to put his byline on that article because of its lack of credibility. Bruce Golding was the reporter at New York Post because he had concerns over the article's credibility. And that was 2 New York Post employees who gave that information to the New York Times on the condition of anonymity out of fear of retaliation. And those New York Post reporters were critical of those articles. Quote, it's not something nothing that meets my journalistic standards. Another reporter called it very flimsy, adding the article just makes you cringe and roll your eyes, and it's hard to stomach. But at the same time, we kind of know what you're signing up for stuff like that. It's disappointing. It sucks to, like, work for, like, a propaganda outlet. And even Fox News passed on the story. Rudy Giuliani initially brought the article to Fox News, but Fox passed until the emails could be properly vetted. At the time, Fox News senior reporter Chris Wallace also called the story suspicious and said, I can understand the concern about this story. It is completely unverified, and frankly, Rudy Giuliani is not the most reliable source anymore. I hate to say that, but it's just true. No one wanted to report on this story except for Rupert Murdoch's tabloid,
yep,
the New York Post.
Well, this was the bombshell.
And it was almost all exclusively talking about Hunter Biden's drug addiction and all of the like naked pictures and videos that were on that laptop. And I still, this guy's like, it was proven to be his laptop. No, it's not. That is still very much up for debate. It's not up for debate that the items we're talking about, the emails, the videos, the photos, are genuine. But how did Rudy Giuliani get that information?
Right.
The whole story with the blind computer store owner who can't verify that it was Hunter Biden who dropped it off, and he just left it there and it sat there for a while until he brought it to the attention of the FBI through Rudy Giuliani, who we know, and the FBI as well as other intelligence sources knew, was on Donald Trump's behalf looking for dirt on Hunter Biden, specifically when it comes to Ukraine and Burisma. Remember the phone call with Trump where he was asking for this exact kind of story from Ukraine President
Vladimir Zelensky? It literally led to his first impeachment.
It was before this. So this is directly coming from the person that was being targeted by Russian intelligence in order to give him this information. I am not sold that this is like this was a laptop that Hunter Biden dropped off. I said it at the time in episode 10 that I thought this was probably information gathered from hacking Hunter Biden's accounts, either like an Apple account or something like that. And that's where they got this information from. And they made up this laptop story as just like a reasonable way that they obtained it.
But it also just goes to show like how pervasive these lies can be. Right? How misinformation can just sit around forever. Because, like you said, we were talking about this in episode 10. It is now episode 120, man.
Yeah, and we're not on every week either.
Right. Like, that's kind of my whole point, is that Hunter Biden was, even though Fox News passed on the story, they didn't pass on all the subsequent stuff and talking about it every single night on Fox News.
Well, I tried to find the original New York Post article, which is why I went back to our notes from episode 10, because I went to the New York Post and I just did a search for Hunter Biden. And, you know, it gives you all the stories from Hunter. They literally have multiple stories about Hunter Biden every single day. I went through like 10, and their page sucks. You can't like format it. You can only get so many results at a time. I went through like 10 pages and I only got to like the end of March.
Jesus Christ, man.
So I gave up on that and I was like, I know we talked about this when it happened. Let me go back to our notes, because I couldn't find the original story because they talk about Hunter Biden so much. And this guy said NPR turned a blind eye, didn't report on it. Well, they did report on the story. They correctly stated that the information was unverified and came from Rudy Giuliani, who is a far cry from a reliable source. The title of the first article that they did multiple articles, but was Analysis, Questionable New York Post Scoop Driven by Ex-Hannity Producer and Giuliani. So,
which is an accurate headline.
Right. They did report on it. They put the information that was on the New York Post article, all the stuff, the email with the Ukrainian businessman, which, because all of the stuff that we talk about now when it comes to Hunter Biden and Burisma and all that wasn't in the original post. It was, again, mostly here's Hunter Biden's dong. It's all the stuff that Marjorie Taylor Greene can't get out of her brain, which, yes, that's why it was getting banned everywhere from people posting, because it was literally like porn. The fact that this guy still can't represent this story properly.
As a senior freaking editor of NPR, man.
And then finally, and the thing that irritates me the most.
Yep, have fun, man.
The lab leak theory came in for rough treatment almost immediately, dismissed as racist or a right-wing conspiracy theory. Anthony Fauci and former NIH head Francis Collins, representing the public health establishment, were its most notable critics. And that was enough for NPR. We became fervent members of Team Natural Origin, even declaring that the lab leak had been debunked by scientists. But that wasn't the case. Yes, it was. 100% was. We only had two of the most eminent scientists and experts in the field. Anthony Fauci has been a top virologist for many, many years.
It's a 30, 40 years now, I believe.
And Francis Collins headed the human gene program.
Yep.
But we're listening to them instead of
Tucker Carlson.
The energy department report. When a colleague on our science desk was asked why they were so dismissive of the lab leak theory, the response was odd.
Was it though?
The colleague compared it to the Bush administration's unfounded argument that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction, apparently meaning we won't get fooled again. But these two events were not even remotely related. Again, politics were blotting out the curiosity and independence that ought to have been driving our work. It's not curiosity and independence. That's anti-science stupidity.
Well, and again, if he wants to really know how they are related, I can just clearly tell from like looking at those two examples, you don't want to waste time as a respected news outlet on unfounded... I was going to say it again. This is what I keep talking about, though. How did you get this position and then not have any idea that, like, as a respected national or even international institution of news, and you're not going to do any type of like, oh yeah, we're not going to waste our time with these unfounded things. We're not going to do that. We have an actual reputation to uphold here.
I have, again, as a counterbalance to all of the nonsense that this guy put in his article, I have an excerpt from an editorial piece written by five credentialed doctors in relevant fields, published in the Journals of the American Society of Microbiology, looking at the evidence for both the zoonotic, which is the natural origin, and lab leak theories. And I'll let you decide which ones they're talking about here, but here is just from the summary at the end. Given the currently available evidence, the two plausible possibilities for the origin of SARS-CoV-2 are not equally likely. Continuing to frame them as such does us all a disservice, dilutes our efforts, and misdirects resources, only serving to weaken our ability to respond to future pandemics. Which one did you think they were calling much more likely there?
Oh, absolutely, the lab leak.
So the fact that this guy can sit here and say that the lab leak theory has not been debunked by scientists don't debunk things, first off, but they're going to tell you whether or not evidence is credible. And there is no credible evidence for a lab leak theory currently. So once again, those are the three stories that he was so concerned about that he just had to speak up and write this article, and all three are absolute nonsense that he is objectively wrong about. But he goes on. What's notable is the extent to which people at every level of NPR have comfortably coalesced around the progressive worldview. And this, I believe, is the most damaging development at NPR. The absence of viewpoint diversity.
Dun, dun, dun.
And he said that he has found that there are 87 registered Democrats working in editorial positions and zero Republicans.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which would include himself, right? Even though he sure talks and acts a lot like a Republican. But apparently that's still no viewpoint diversity, even though he's there and is a senior editor. There is an unspoken consensus about the stories we should pursue and how they should be framed. Unspoken, but it's there. I've seen it. It's frictionless. One story after another about instances of supposed racism, transphobia, signs of the climate apocalypse, now he's a climate denier, Israel doing something bad, and the dire threat of Republican policies. It's almost like an assembly line.
But that's all happening. And at a news organization, wouldn't you want to cover that? I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just like losing my mind here. But again, he's a senior editor. Why would you not want to cover newsworthy things? Is there been tons of stories about systemic racism and transphobia? Absolutely. Has there been a lot of stories about how Republicans are currently trying to literally undermine our democracy as we speak? Yes. How is that not newsworthy? How is this just like an assembly line where we're just trying to push out like some weird propaganda product that he thinks that NPR is doing here? It drives me up a freaking wall.
He does seem to take particular offense at the Israel-Gaza coverage, which I think is interesting.
I was going to say the same thing. That's why I put it in there.
Name Uri. I assume he is Jewish. I think that's kind of touched a nerve with him. He seems to be very conservative. Sounds like this is what spurred this article, is the coverage, I think correctly, that Israel is indeed committing a genocide in Gaza. And I don't even think NPR puts it quite that bluntly. But, you know, they're not, as he says, they're downplaying the atrocities of October 7th, overlooking how Hamas intentionally puts Palestinian civilians in peril, and giving little weight to the explosion of anti-Semitic hate around the world.
Have they, though? Have they?
Well, they keep talking about how everybody's dying and starving and there's a famine. But what about October 7th? Yeah, I know it's happening right now every day. Hundreds or thousands of people are dying. But what about October 7th? What about all those unfounded stories about babies being decapitated?
Well, and even then, downplaying the atrocities sounds, an, I don't know, pretty bold claim if you want to ask me, that NPR is actually downplaying the atrocities of October 7th. Dude, for like a month, that's all any news outlet was talking about. So what are you even talking about? They're downplaying the atrocities. We are now like 6 months into this thing, and guess what? Who's still freaking dying? The Palestinians. And like you said, at a genocidal level.
I do think that that's a big motivator here. I'm not going to say that's the only. He clearly, again, with everything else, this guy is a conservative. He probably consider himself a libertarian. If I had to guess, if I'm putting...
I guess, but that's what we just call like people who don't understand things.
I think he's the business editor for NPR. That seems like a good position for a libertarian. And most of his comments here kind of lead me in that direction. If you didn't vote for Donald Trump twice and you hold all of these conservative worldviews, you voted for Gary Johnson in 2016.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and also like we didn't bring them up, but he tries to bring up like these other stories and he includes links in them as well of like how NPR is putting out these insane, crazy left-wing articles out there that are just nonsense. And there's too many, we're not going to get into them, but like every single one of those is just a complete misrepresentation, deliberate complete misrepresentation of what the articles are. And I looked at every single one because I just wanted to see. So now like he's going from like, you're just stupid to like, you're just straight up lying. It pisses me off so much that this person was in power for so long.
He's still there.
I know. And he should leave. Sorry. He should not be there anymore.
Well, that does kind of bring us to the headline from the New York Post that said, how long before the brave NPR editor exposing the woke broadcaster gets shown the door?
Man, I wished it was sooner.
Well, yeah, I mean, it puts everyone who works with this guy in an impossible position. He basically just called into question your journalistic integrity and said that you're some brainwashed cog in this woke machine, and you're supposed to go to him with your story and have him be your editor?
Right.
There's no way you trust that guy. So yeah, I don't see how anyone can keep working with him at NPR after this article. But they know damn well if they fire him, he becomes a martyr.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And this reminds me so much of the whole NBC article that we talked about last week, where NBC was getting serious backlash over having Ron McDaniel on, right? That's viewpoint diversity. We keep hearing this over and over, Jason, where conservatives want viewpoint diversity. They wanted it in the Coddling of the American Mind book that we reviewed. They want it on MSNBC. They want it supposedly at NPR as well. Like, I always hated the phrase, like, facts skew liberal. I know some people who say it. I'm not a big fan of it because I don't want to make the idea of facts partisan. But what are you talking about with viewpoint diversity? What are you trying to say? What do you want to be included in your viewpoint diversity? Because everything you just said, you as in not you, Jason, but as the...
No, I get Uri, what you mean.
Everything Uri just said was just factually wrong. Is that the diversity one? We also need to have wrong opinions about things in our respective news outlets. The idea that you have to include, like, both sides of the story equally because... because you don't want to offend one side or another, right? We want to be a true neutral news source here. But by doing that, you are elevating incredibly incorrect, inaccurate, and idiotic positions that are harmful and dangerous to our country.
Mm. And NPR did respond. Another editor at NPR responded, wrote a post, and it's very NPR. It's very, like, mild. And they posited that the idea that both their staff and their listenership have been trending more politically Democrat lately was because Donald Trump has turned more moderate conservatives, the Mitt Romney conservatives specifically, they mentioned, away from the Republican Party. In the article, Uri says that in 2011, NPR's audience was 26% conservative, 23% middle of the road centrist, and 37% liberal. And in 2023, only 11% were conservative, 21% middle of the road, 67% liberal. So big jump in liberal. Middle of the road stays the same, even though he says it goes down. It went down 2%. That's statistically insignificant, but he makes a big deal of it, whatever. And the conservative went way down.
Oh.
The NPR response said the reason why that is the case is if you were a conservative listening to NPR rather than, say, Fox News, you were probably a more moderate conservative, like a Mitt Romney style conservative. Well, the Republican Party has done everything they possibly can to alienate you. You might not identify as Republican anymore.
Or conservative.
I think that that's incorrect. I believe, instead, Donald Trump and all of the other extremist voices that are dominating both political and media for conservatives, like your Marjorie Taylor Greene's, Matt Gaetz's, and then also your Tucker Carlson's and Jesse Waters, they're turning conservatives away from science and reality and teaching them that any media outlet that is not basically parroting QAnon conspiracies are fake news and the enemy of the people. Not to be trusted, not to be taken seriously. Well, so if you were a conservative listening to NPR and you're also listening to Tucker Carlson and Donald Trump are telling you that NPR is the devil and that mainstream media is evil, liberal propaganda. So of course you're going to stop listening to it.
Right. And I mean, how often have we heard the term legacy media nowadays? It's a pejorative. They do not want anybody listening to these things. And that I was going to completely agree with that as well. That attacking of outlets like NPR, why would conservatives even want to go there anymore if they know that it's just bad for them?
And in my mind, it's the same thing that's going on with Uri Berliner here. He is listening to all that, and he's parroting it all throughout this whole article. He's just talking right-wing conspiracy talking points, Wuhan lab leak theory, the Hunter Biden's laptop. It's all this. No wonder he's like, I don't feel at home at NPR here anymore. Yes, because you're falling victim to the same propaganda nonsense that your listeners are.
Right, and that's where I'm going to add the other thing to what you said, which is, now that we have media fragmentation at like an all-time high right now, you don't get exposed to NPR unless you actually seek out NPR. If you're like a middle-of-the-road, moderate conservative guy, you don't need to go see NPR anymore because they don't care. Like, you're going to watch whatever news you have on, and that's about it. People aren't finding things on like websites anymore or actual, like, God forbid, printed editions of anything anymore. It's through things like TikTok and Facebook and X or Twitter or whatever the hell it is. So to say that media fragmentation doesn't exist, and that's why we're actually having a sorting of people going to the outlets that probably they prefer most, that's very unsurprising. This isn't the fault of NPR. This is what happens when we sort ourselves out, also via our own news outlets and our own realities. And that's how you can get somebody like Uri, who basically is working at NPR, but also simultaneously living in a completely different reality from all his other coworkers.
And somebody who thinks that saying there's no scientific evidence for the lab leak theory, how that's somehow woke propaganda.
Right.
Instead of just actual science and literally reporting facts is having a liberal bias. That's the problem.
Well, again, it goes back to the saying. Like, I hate the saying that facts skew liberal. But now it's not even just a saying. That's a literal problem news outlets have nowadays.
Well, it seems like unscientific conspiracy theories are skewing conservative.
Well, apparently that's the Republican viewpoint that all these people want in viewpoint diversity.
Right. Yeah. What's Q have to say about that? Like, no, we're not going to report that. It's stupid nonsense. Oh, liberals. Look at all your bias. Woke propaganda. And the reason we're talking about this and how we found out about it is because it's being pushed everywhere by conservatives as evidence that NPR needs to lose their government funding. They are public radio. They do get government funding. We have Vivek Ramaswamy, failed Republican candidate for president, hosting an article with the headline, "It took courage for NPR editor to speak out."
Did it? All these older white men are just so brave all the time. Every time they get a special on Netflix, every time they get a amazing super rich book deal,
they're being canceled.
Every time they get national coverage and praised by millions of people for saying something that they can't say,
because they're being silenced and their free speech is being taken away from them. And then they go on Fox News and Newsmax
and say the thing they can't say over and over and over again and make an entire career out of it. Looking at you, Jordan Peterson.
We even had Donald Trump hosting on Truth Social. "No more funding for NPR. A total scam. Editor said they have no Republicans and is only used to damage Trump. They are a liberal disinformation machine, not $1. ! All in caps.
So let me...
Presidential candidate.
So let me ask you this. Let's try to steelman this as best as we can. Can you think of a situation where it could be bad to have that many liberal-leaning people? And could it be better to have some kind of conservative voices on there?
Well, clearly they have one.
Right.
So, that's the other thing is like...
But this, I'm not talking like actual numbers.
I can't trust this guy's numbers.
Oh, right. And I'm not talking about actual
numbers. I mean, he's counting himself as a Democrat in this.
Right.
Which, I mean, clearly he does not have the same viewpoint as everyone else.
Correct. But I'm not talking about actual numbers here. I mean, this has been a thing outside of NPR for a very long time now, where like journalists and journalism tends to skew left and liberal. And we can talk about whether that's like very centrist liberal nonsense, you know, or like there's no actual progressive journalists out there that can like make mainstream stuff. But I'm saying
But here's the problem. Is it appropriate for any news organization to include people who have fundamentally
wrong?
Yeah, like incorrect theories. Like, I'll just keep going back to the one because it's the one that I damn well know scientifically. You know, there's not much science involved in the other stories, but the lab leak theory, that's just accepted science. You will not find any reputable scientific expert in a related field that will tell you there is credible evidence for the lab leak theory. So should they have to report just incorrect theories or someone's opinion?
For the sake of viewpoint difference. I mean, God, even when I say it.
And isn't that just like the Overton window? Like, it's just trying to shift it more to the right. Like,
well, to be honest, it sounds very much like the exact anti-DEI argument that conservatives make all the time, is that you are lowering the quality of said product for supposed diversity and inclusion, right? We are supposedly wanting to include more conservative thought into our news outlets because we need more viewpoint diversity. So the only answer is to literally have more incorrect or factually incorrect things in our news.
And then you'll just have to have somebody at the end just say, like, none of this can be verified. You know, like, I don't think that's how news should work.
Well, and even then, opinion columns are still heavily conservative.
Yeah, you see it on all the time.
Look at the New York Times opinion column. Mm-hmm. Like, it's ridiculous. I don't know what more diversity you want without trying to actually lower it from the fact stuff. And that's where I was trying to get at earlier, too, because I agree with you, Jason, where personally, I think we're just kind of kidding ourselves, or not you and I, but like we as a society, where we want to say, yes, we should have more diversity of opinion. Because that's a good thing. Groupthink can happen. Groupthink can be bad. And you know, I think back even to like when we did the Coddling of the American Mind episodes, where we had several examples of where there were small universities and groupthink took hold and they kind of went a little wacky. That's fine. Like, that can happen. Okay, fine. We can prevent that from happening. But to completely throw out what reality is so conservatives can feel happy and included sounds like nonsense to me.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to come up with like best case scenario out of all of these, or at least for this, for Uri's case. The Hunter Biden laptop is as close as he's got. Because again, the Mueller report, to say there was nothing there, it was all just smoke and mirrors.
Just blatantly not true.
Yeah, just again, there's facts. Like, there are people in jail. You cannot deny that. Like, you are just wrong. The Hunter Biden laptop, the actual content, again, was real. And if you go back to episode 10, that's what I said. I didn't think it was falsified in any way. I just questioned its origin. And that is important. If you're just like, they didn't have access to these files and documents. All they had to go on were what the New York Post's article was.
Right. Which they admittedly said was bad.
Everyone did, though, not just them. So what was their journalistic responsibility at the time? It's not like they didn't say anything, which is what Uri is trying to say in his article. They just ignored it because they thought it would help Trump. They didn't. They did have an article. They wrote an article about it. More than one. But the first one that they came out with just basically said, hey, here is what's being reported by the New York Post, but it's coming from a source that we cannot trust, which is exactly accurate. And you still can't. That source is still an issue when it comes to the laptop. And everything that conservatives say that it is all speculation and all things that are coming from these other sources, like the Smirnoff guy who, you know, is in FBI custody
right.
for lying. So no, you're not going to just report everything that Rudy Giuliani tells you because he is a compromised source. So I really don't believe this article was in good faith at all.
I don't think so either.
And he talks about how he's not trying to get NPR defunded. He's just trying to fix the, you know, correct the problems.
Yeah, you did it, buddy. Good job.
But that is what this is going to lead to, is a call to defund NPR. And it already has. That's what's being said on Fox News. That's what we just, you know, said Donald Trump asked for, demanded, whatever, tantrumed. And I think this is coming from a place where he's clearly just not happy with
people who disagree with him. That's all it is.
And the fact that he works, you know, at one of the few news outlets that isn't falling for the, we need to get clicks, we need to get views, we need to get these sensationalist stories out, like we talked about, the ones that are ad-driven, because NPR is partly government-funded and is listener-supported. That's a good thing.
Yes.
And this is someone railing against that. He wants those conspiracy theories. He wants the arguing heads on and, you know, yelling and screaming at each other. And that's not, we don't need more of that. We have enough of that. NPR is one of the few reliable, just regular news sources that isn't trying to push some agenda.
So goodbye, Uri. We didn't know you existed, but now we know you suck. We look forward to seeing you on Substack, charging an arm.
I'm sure he'll be a new editor at Free Press for a while with Barry Weiss.
Then he's going to go to the Heterodox Academy, something with...
They can talk about how they were silenced by cancel culture while running a news organization that gets a lot of conservative billionaire funding.
We'll wait to see your memoir in about a year and a half. Fare thee well.
Thank you for listening. We hope to see you in the next episode. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at ThinkProPod. You can email us at thinkpropod@gmail.com. And remember, when in doubt, think progressively.
You know, we talked about the X-Men 97 thing.
Oh, yeah.
That show is amazing. It is 100 times better than the original. Whoa. Like, all those chuds that we're talking about.
How shitty it was.
Yeah, and how Disney's going to ruin it because they're woke. Like, they were so wrong. And I mean, all of that was happening before the show even aired. But it's on episode 5, and wow.
Really?
Yeah. Episode 5 in particular is amazing.
Interesting.